Morning, Mary.
Morning, Cheryl. And Bonnie.
Good morning. Hi, Nancy. Graham. Lillian.
Morning.
Morning, Kathy. Gary, good to see you. I forgot to ask you the other day how your recovery's going. I hope it's well. That's good to hear. How happy it makes me to see all of you and to hear that great chaos of our voices together. Thank you to Jeff May for these words about gathering in this time. Come, gather, not into a common space, sharing a physical closeness we long for, precluded by wise choice. But come gather into this common time and a common space. We need to be together. We yearn for connection. We hunger for the familiar faces of friends, the sound of shared voices proclaiming who we are, where we are going, that which resonates with our hopes, our dreams, our values. Come gather. We are here in this space made of all spaces. And we share our becoming in this moment. Come, let us worship. Welcome to the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of Durango and our online worship space. I'm Bonnie Miller, a member of UUFD and today's volunteer host for the Sunday service. There's a banner on the corner of our church building that says, "Even apart, we're in this together." We are all weary of our physical separation. Our deprivation makes abundantly clear how important our relationships and connections to each other are to us. So we must hold on to the strength of our covenantal commitment to one another to see our way through the trials of these times. We still love each other. We still love justice and truth and living a meaningful life. So we turn on our computers, our iPads, notepads, our smartphones, and place ourselves into this common virtual space to show up for each other and our work in the world. Reverend Paul Langston Daly. Reverend Paul is a consulting minister with the Bell Street Chapel in Providence, Rhode Island, and assistant minister for adult faith formation for the Unitarian Universalist Society of Fairhaven in Fairhaven, Massachusetts. Reverend Paul has a thought-provoking message to share with us on this weekend when we celebrate Labor Day.
It's a joy to be with you all this morning. You know, I've been thinking a lot, and it feels to me like we are at a monumental turning point, a liminal place in space and time, where anything can happen, where possibilities are real. With COVID-19 wreaking havoc on our economy and on our society, we are beginning to see that there might be some options, that we can make choices as a society to be different, to do better, to think more creatively. But in order to do that, I think we have to understand how we came to be here, how we got here. And I think the roots of our current American capitalism are most deeply found in the Southern plantation. And it was a unique form of capitalism because we never really got to see the promise of that small C capitalism with the idea of competition and small business, kind of capitalism that's really sort of balanced between the self-interest of the business owners and the needs of the consumers. Instead, what we have is a cotton industry that thrived, and it did so by providing unrealistic profits to landowners, born on the backs of human beings. Even banks of the southern plantations were backed not by land, but by the value of the enslaved people they held in their possession. Loans and projections were dependent on exponential growth. Human beings were monetized. And not just any human beings, Black and Indigenous human beings. And the valuing of their bodies changed everything. Prior to the mid-19th century, the very notion of capitalization, of turning everything into a monetary value, was unheard of. But in that time, and as a result of slavery, capitalism became the dominant lens through which all things are seen, even today. And I just want to define what I mean when I say capitalization. It's the act by which a society takes all of the basic elements of society and life and transforms them into income-generating assets that are valued and allocated in accordance with their capacity to make money and yield future returns. In other words, things have value only if they can generate money, and the more money they can generate, the more value they have. But prior to the mid-19th century, the measure of any good society was a moral measure, not a monetary measure. They included elements like rates of prostitution and incarceration, levels of literacy, crime, education, insanity, poverty, life expectancy, and disease. These were the measures that made up a good society. People were at the center of the economy. Slavery and the wealth generated by it changed everything. And the capitalists of our history were bullies. From the plantation owners of the South and their brutality on the enslaved workforce, to the factory workers in the North locking their workers in, to the manipulative monopoly of the railroad transportation industry. Matthew Desmond from the 1619 Project of the New York Times writes, "What made the cotton economy boom in the United States, and not in all the other far-flung parts of the world with climates and soil suitable to the crop, was our nation's willingness to use violence on non-white people and to exert its will on seemingly endless supplies of land and labor." We all know those human beings kidnapped into slavery were treated as property with no regard for family units or relationships. Productivity and profit were all that mattered. And this, my friends, this southern plantation is the model of today's economy. Today's huge corporate structures are built on the same model, aggressively reducing costs, externalizing all expenses, and maximizing profit for the few with no regard to working conditions or to the planet, and all too big to fail. Profits before people, profits at all costs. This is why lives are less important than property in today's America, especially Black and Indigenous lives, because this has always been the case. This is why we say Black lives matter. This is why we say Indigenous lives matter, because they haven't. And there is another way. There are options. There are models out there, economic models that are much more equitable. And our faith calls us to seek a new way, a new center, one that holds and upholds the primacy of people over profits. Our own universalist faith refuses this model of unending growth and consumption. We reject the model of externalization. Universalism recognizes the inherent dignity and worth of all human beings and acknowledges our interconnection and our interdependence. We and so many other faiths hold this seemingly contrary view. We center love, not wealth. We value life more than property. And we honor the truth that each one of us has something unique to offer the world, a gift far more valuable than money. And we have been trained by the wealthy, to see the world through the eyes of those who seek wealth first and foremost. We have been placed, we have been indoctrinated to a monetary value. We have been indoctrinated to place a monetary value on everything, as capitalism has informed and shaped our lives. And we have a choice. In this liminal time and place, when all things are possible, we can reject this notion. We can continue to speak about the center of a moral measure of our nation. We can talk about healthcare and education, about life expectancy and disease and poverty, and we can make these the center of what it means to measure the goodness of a nation. We can speak the truth of the primacy of love and life and of the gifts that we all bring. Our faith asks us to imagine the possibilities and then work together to make it possible, to make it happen. Capitalism is supposed to be about choice, not unlike our democracy. But when the deck is stacked, when new businesses are bought and killed, or when competition is actively prevented, when labor is silenced, abused, and cheated, we all lose. When the 1% has learned how to take advantage of our system to hoard extraordinary wealth while millions suffer needlessly, we have a problem. And when we talk about universal basic income and someone says, we can't have that, people will take advantage of it. We already have people taking advantage of a system that doesn't work for 90% of us, for 98% of us. We can do better. We have a choice, and that choice this year is borne out at the ballot box because our economic system and our political system are tied together for better or worse. And perhaps this is something we would hope to change. So I invite you to continue to learn, to continue to participate in the ways that you have, to more fully understand our history and our nation, and to bring our circle to widen the circle of universalist love and faith and hope wider, including all those, to break down the division that has separated us and made us so angry. Because only by doing so, with intention, can we change the direct trajectory of our nation and perhaps our world. This is our work to do. May we do it together. Blessed be, Ashe, and Amen.